Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Word Balloon, the comic book conversation show. John Sutris here, getting over a little bit of a cold, but happy to present to you this great conversation with Jerry Duggan. Jerry is back. Man, it's been a long time. I had him on when he and Brian Posehn were just starting to take over Deadpool, and now at the end of Marvel Legacy, Jerry is wrapping up his Deadpool run with his bucket list story arc, and we're also here to talk about his Image comic, Analog, a brand new comic that's coming out in April. Really sounds like my kind of thing. A little espionage, a little crime. Fighting against, a world where, man, and especially coming out of the Facebook weekend and all the information that, was unceremoniously taken from 50 million Facebook users. Well, Analog seems to dovetail right into that kind of world where things have even gotten worse. And people have to resort to hand drops and, paper and less digital transformations of or transferring of information. Pretty interesting stuff. And I really think that Jerry tapped into a very timely subject. Plus, in general, it's great to talk to Jerry about his transition from comedy writing to what he does in comic books. And he's still doing both, and we talk about that. He's been doing a little writing for award season, which is always fun to hear about. Some great behind-the-scenes stories in that regard. And I always like Jerry, and I'm kicking myself that it's been this long since I've gotten him to sit down and do a Word Balloon. I mentioned that he was on in the interim talking about when he had just taken over Guardians of the Galaxy. And I know we covered that Marvel press conference here on Word Balloon. So it's great to get Jerry to sit down and have a nice conversation as we do now. Jerry Duggan talking Deadpool, Analog, Guardians of the Galaxy, some other great Marvel moments as well, and comedy writing today, all on today's Word Balloon. It's brought to you by the League of Word Balloon listeners. Thank you very much, League, for your support. It means a lot. We're in convention season and just a couple weeks away from C2E2. That's a local show, but I've got a few on-the-road shows that I'll be doing this year, and it's mostly thanks to the League of Word Balloon listeners who help me pay the bills and get to conventions and make connections and start to bring you more interesting guests, along with the usual Word Balloon guests that I think are interesting as well. Word Balloon succeeds, and a big part of it is thanks to those of you who subscribe via Patreon. So as always, thank you very much for your support. If you'd like to subscribe to Word Balloon, Word Balloon is free, but if you want to help out the cause, click on the Patreon ad at wordballoon.com or go to patreon.com/wordballoon, and all the information is there. But truly, thank you for your support, League of Word Balloon listeners. Word Balloon is also brought to you by InStock Trades at InStockTrades.com, where you will find a lot of great Jerry Duggan stories. Not just his Marvel work, but you'll even go back to some of his old collaborations with Rick Remender and Brian Posehn. But let's talk about some Marvel product with Jerry Duggan's name on it. The Star Wars Chewbacca trade paperback. Fantastic story with Jerry and his buddy Phil Noto. Good collaborators. This is 42% off, $9.85. You can get lots of copies of his run on Uncanny Avengers, which was a great combination of the X-Men and the Avengers. You can get Volume 2, Apocalypse Twins, at 42% off, $11.49. You can get, The Man Who Fell to Earth, and that's with him and Ryan Stegman. And this is Ultimate Avengers Unity Trade Paperback Volume 2. 42% off, $10.43. You can get his run on Nova. Man, that was great. You can get things like many volumes of Nova are 42 and 50% off. Homecoming is 50% off with a great conversation, or I should say great adventure with Sam Alexander and the Hulk. How about that, man? This is, 50% off, $8.50. You can also get Last Christmas. I mentioned Jerry's great collaboration with Brian Posehn and Rick Remender. Now, this is when Rick was doing art. Unbelievable. A really funny Christmas story. It's 42% off. Just you can get the trade paperback for $8.69, or you can get the hardcover for $14.49. And a great, really amazing story that he and Phil Noto did, Infinite Horizon, The Soldier with No Name. It is such a great look at kind of the Odyssey in a very different way. But what a beautiful story that Jerry and Phil did for Image years ago. 42% off, $10.42. There's more, but I'll tell you more on the back end of the show of other great things. We didn't even talk about his Deadpool trades, for God's sake, or his Hulk run, which I love so much. But lots of Jerry Duggan product at great prices at InStockTrades.com. Okay, without further ado, let's get into our conversation with Jerry Duggan. Lots to talk about. Always a pleasure. It seems like we talk more at conventions than we do here at the podcast. We're going to rectify that in the months ahead. But here's Jerry Duggan now on Word Balloon. Jerry Duggan, welcome back to Word Balloon. Man, it's been forever, and I apologize because we've meant to do it a few times, and life got in the way, and at least we've always been able to say hello to each other at conventions, but I'm glad you're back.
Yeah, we've threatened one another with this for a long time now.
Yeah, so, I mean, I had you at a Marvel press conference, I think, when you first took over Guardians, or it was announced that you were taking over Guardians. And that's the closest, I think, that I've had you coming on the podcast directly, so welcome back.
Thank you very much.
And congratulations. I just went through last week's Infinity Countdown Prime.
What'd you think?
I liked it. No, honestly, I liked it. I'll be completely honest, man. I'm a little concerned with events just coming fast and furious still, and it's like, okay. But, I mean, at least it's a good story, and I think it is something that ties into anticipation for the Infinity War, and, I mean, it's always a good subject, and certainly pulls at some of the threads of what's going on with Marvel Legacy.
Yeah, I think, look, I was very thrilled to be collaborating on the Guardians comics. The plan always was to have this story explode out of Guardians. It just, to Marvel's credit, look, to everyone's credit over there, they just were saying, hey, let's move up the time when that story would shift. And so I don't know if you had a chance to look at the Warlock one-shot or not that the Allreds did was the bridge between Guardians and Infinity Countdown. But, I'm getting to reach for some of the toys that I've never had the opportunity to write. And I'm really having a lot of fun. You know, I worked with Dio on that Prime issue, and he and Frank Martin, and God, that was such a joy and the Allreds were a bucket list combo for me. And
sure. And
so now as we move into Infinity Countdown, I'm bringing my Guardians collaborator, Aaron Cooter, with me. And then we're being joined by Mike Hawthorne for a part of that story. And, I am telling the biggest, craziest stories that I've ever attempted in Infinity Countdown. And, I've been talking about these plans for a long time in the Marvel editorial retreats, and I've always been thrilled with how the story landed in there, and the story was always made better by the contributions of those other writers. So I know that there may be some like event fatigue, but this isn't necessarily like a line-wide crossover.
That even was though my question, okay,
yeah,
okay.
Even though I think, look, we've got some really cool crossovers, and some people are sort of scratching their heads about why Black Widow and or Daredevil might be a part of that. And I promise it will make very good story sense. In fact, I think the first week of March, Infinity Countdown number one hits, and at the end of that issue, you'll see why their presence is necessary for the story. And look, I'm sensitive. I grew up, I was the biggest fan of the Starlin stuff in the world.
Oh, yeah.
I met Jim for the first time, I think in 1986, may have been 87, at a convention when I was just a kid on the other side of the table. And he signed my comic books, and I bought a book from him that he co-authored, called Among Mad Men, and we talked for a long time. And so to be able to play with some of these toys now really brings me great joy, but I have no interest, none whatsoever, in sort of retelling or reimagining the stories that he told.
Sure.
So this is a very different story that involves the Infinity Stones. I mean, look, when he comes right down to it, they're MacGuffins. You know, it really is about what you're saying with these characters. And it is a very character driven piece. And, you know, some of the characters that this will come to involve, I think are pretty obvious. And some of the characters you won't necessarily see coming. But it is a new story and it's about creation, the big story that I'm telling. And, you know, I've kidded around in interviews, but it's really true. And some of the characters are beginning to get hip to this. You know, I'm intrigued by the possibility that our universe is a simulation. And, you know, unfortunately for the characters in the Marvel universe, that is true. So it's neat. You know, some of the characters may begin to see the imperfections in their universe, and even fans that might grumble will, you know, the last time we saw the stones, they were destroyed. And before that, they were different colors and they were cut gems and now they're stones and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, that's actually like a little bit about what my story is.
Sure.
So in a super fun way, I think we'll sort of get into all of it. And you know, I think that's why I was very pleased to walk into these editorial retreats with some big crazy ideas that, you know, made people sort of very happy and laugh. And then they go, boy, I'm glad that's you telling that story and not me. but it is, you know, I'm very lucky in collaborators. And Jordan D. White, my editor, has really helped me shape this from something that we were going to fire out of a cannon from the pages of Guardians into the Marvel Universe. And now that it's happening, I'm actually grateful that we shortened the runway a little bit, because a lot of the bigger ideas that were sort of more spread out are being sort of distilled into the story in a, I think, a more fun way. You know, I know you know Dave Mandel.
Yes.
He helped me, I think, become the writer I am today. I got to write a couple of things with him. And, you know, the big lesson that he taught me and that I think he learned from Larry and Jerry on Seinfeld was, hey, you would walk in and pitch them a story and then you'd say, that's the end. And they'd go, no, that's the end of your second act. Let's smush it all together and see what happens after. And so I have constantly been trying to accordion story to, you know, be able to trim the fat and smush the good stuff together towards the front and then see what surprising thing that you can find at the back end that you didn't know was there. And boy, have we done that on this story. And that's why I would think that I'd be a little bit more nervous about, you know, the helming an event. But, you know, I know the story so well and I know where I'm going. And so I'm pretty relaxed.
Well, it's a great first issue. And honestly,
thanks.
What I liked about Jason's event, Original Sin, I think you are putting interesting different players in an Infinity story that wouldn't normally be there. And I mean, obviously, you know, having Turk possessing one of the stones and everything is a big deal. And I think it makes sense to have, obviously, Daredevil and Black Widow. It's a fair assumption that they are going to be addressing Turk's possession of, it's the Mind Stone.
The Mind Stone, yeah. And, you know, it's funny. Every couple of years, we seem to have turnover and new fans. And, you know, one of the questions I was asked on Twitter was, well, why can Turk even hold the Mind Stone without disintegrating? And so, you know, that's just an idea that the MCU put forth that, you know, an ordinary mortal couldn't even hold it. And that's not what our inheritance is from our stories on the other side. And, you know, I came in after CB, after CB was named as the new EIC, I actually went to New York in December for a story meeting. I was very grateful. He didn't have a lot of time at that point. It was the holidays. but everyone cleared their calendar for me. And I worked with CB and Joe and Tom and Nick Lowe and Jordan and Annalise and all of our support staff to bang out this story. And, the thing that came out of it that I think really excited Joe the most was sort of, hey, what happens to a person that comes into contact with an Infinity Stone? And, you know, finding, you know, Turk as a character that would be a lens into that world, I think is really exciting. You know, it's, I'm not there to punk Turk. Do you know what I mean? Turk has survived. Like, think about what Turk, like, he's a survivor. And so to me, I think it's sort of the perfect hands to explore. You know, he's a guy with ambition. He's a guy that can be dangerous. He's a guy that, has not encountered much power, but has always sort of been in the wings as it was wielded. And so I'm thrilled. I mean, like, that's I even remember Grotto, you know, and so, you know, his old partner in crime was sort of the guy that didn't get much screen time. You know, he was the guy that was changing into the Santa suit with him in the alley and Born Again.
Hilarious. Grotto.
So, yeah, I mean, you know, there is, again, don't worry. It's a cosmic Marvel story. You know, Adam Warlock has a part to play. The Guardians have a part to play. The Avengers will have a part to play. But, you know, the what Countdown is leading towards is the big – it's a big story that leads to an even bigger story. And so I'm thinking about it as all one story, and I've been doing that since Guardians, really. But the notion that – we're going to get to a big Infinity story. You know, it was just where I was going. And look, my Infinity story, probably if I had to describe my act one of the story that follows Countdown, it's a little like the Warriors with the Infinity Stones.
Sure.
You know,
no, I get it.
You know, you may not ever see anyone wield all of them together. So I'm stoked. Marvel's stoked. Everyone sort of was super bummed out in all the right places and laughed in the right spots.
Good.
And, you know, that is my sweet and sour to make people, that's my secret formula to make people, feel something and then laugh, I hope. And so, this checks all the boxes.
Excellent, man. Now, you know, honestly, some of your quirkier mini series have always been fun. I loved, and I can't remember what the year was, in Secret Wars, the Western story you told.
Oh man, wasn't that so much fun?
Absolutely.
That was like, I can't take much credit for that because Nick Varela and
did they hand you the plot?
No, that's true. I did write it, but I mean that she just she killed it. It was at that time. It was a really exciting time to be in the room, in that editorial room at Marvel, because what Jonathan did was, set the table and just sort of say, hey, this is the only part of the table that I need. And there is more table that he was looking to have us fill, you know? And,
sure.
And so people brought these wonderful ideas. And I was on Hulk at the time. I had inherited Hulk, and we didn't quite know what Hulk was going to be in Secret Wars until you walk into the room. And I said, look, I'd really like to tell a story about Hulk, and I really want to tell a Western. And I sort of had this idea that he might even ride in on Devil Dinosaur. But what I didn't know was that was, you know, there was already some really strong plans.
Devil Dinosour, absolutely.
Yeah, and then, but once I said Western, everyone was like, just do the Western. And I was like, really? Because I have a lot of cool ideas about a Western. And, you know, in a perfect world, that would have been an ongoing beyond Secret Wars.
Yeah, like, man, that was a great – absolutely. It was a great story.
I could have written that for years and years and years. And by the way, like, you know, there's a lot of times when you know, you get into a situation in a creative endeavor where, you know, writers and artists and editors might sort of prison eat over their little – you know, over their plates, you know, and somebody – you know, the idea that someone reach over and might take a little food off your plate, that never happened in that room. As soon as I said Marvel Western and that, you know, it would be 1872. And I was thinking about calling it Timely. Everyone just sort of got it. And then people just started yelling at me, like James Robinson was like, oh, my God, you know, Clint Hawkeye could have been had scarlet fever. And so he went deaf and perhaps he was, you know, raised by the natives and they think that he, and, you know, a million great, wonderful ideas that I just like I didn't have the space for. But that was the 1872 remains sort of one of my favorite collaborations, you know, and one of the few times that I've really written a Captain America that really speaks to me.
I hear you, man. No, it was every version was true to the heart of the character in this Western backdrop. And yeah, you know, I mean, I know that, and now I'm blanking at which Bendis event it was, where the libraries are like, hey, can we have more from this miniseries world? And they had Van Lente, like, do a couple sequel stories. You know, it was either, like, you know...
like a House of M, maybe.
Yeah, it was either... Yeah, I think it was House of M. I think it specifically was House of M. And, yeah, so... I hope somebody smart that loves Westerns or some book outlet is like, boy, let's get more of that, because that would be a terrific way to do more Western tales. And, you know, Marvel's always had a great history with the West as well.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that was it. You know,
Rawhide Kid. I mean, yeah, man.
Rawhide Kid. Yeah. And we hid some Easter eggs, too, in 1872 that we had fully intended to sort of, you know, get back to in success. And even Deadpool shows up for one panel at the end, and he was the Merc without the mouth. His mouth had been shot off, and he was traveling around with Pastor Frank, who is Frank Castle, and Nick Varela and I still talk about that when I run into her at conventions. You know, that's a world that I would love to get back to. But, you know, having done it once, it feels like a miracle that I got an analog of the Marvel Universe as a Western. So I can't be too upset that I only got four issues out of it.
Wow, it was only four issues, man. No, it was great, man. And I met them when the last time we did speak on the record at that press conference for Guardians. You have taken them. I mean, you are very comfortable in the universe. You tell really fun stories, and your knowledge of the Marvel Universe is serving you well. I think they're it's a fresh take on a lot of established characters, and you're knocking it out of the park, man. Seriously, I think you've had a great run.
I really appreciate it. You know, I've been lucky in collaborators from the beginning. You know, I really did. I've said this before, and it feels like I'm doing a bit, but it's really true. You know, I thought we'd wash out pretty quickly after
Deadpool.
After getting Deadpool, you know, you just I think expectations were you know, they hoped that we would land well, but I think they had another. You know, I think I'd be lying if, you know, they maybe didn't have plans just in case we belly flopped, you know. And also, if we had, you know, if we had not landed well, it really would have been on us. We had Tony Moore, right? We had Brian Posehn. We had Jeff Darrow on covers. And so, you know, it was everything that we could have everything that you could want in a launch. Sure. And the launch lasted, you know, through not just leading us all the way to Secret Wars, but then also, you know, I was able to keep the book solo after. And I think I actually did more Deadpool on this side of Secret Wars than I did on the first side.
Interesting.
So I'm coming up on, like, I think by the time 300 comes out and that's my last issue, I think it's somewhere around 125 issues that I've either co-written or written or collaborated on. And, you know, it's what a time to be the guy that blundered into a Deadpool career.
No question. So, yeah. I'm just coughing off the air so you can't hear it. That's all.
No, it's very, it's good.
No, you're right though. And I think it would have been fair when you did first come out with Brian that it was kind of like, all right, these guys are in as a stunt. This will be fun. Two comedy guys coming in, writing a comedy character for Marvel. But no, your staying power speaks for itself, man. And hey, that's awesome. And I know for a fact that Deadpool and Star Wars are kind of leading the pack as far as the Marvel output right now, as far as the best sellers. So yeah, that's wonderful. So.
Yeah, that's been neat. So it's a good time to be in the Jerry Duggan business.
Attaboy. So tell me, and forgive me, because I'm not a regular Deadpool reader, what is Deadpool's Marvel Legacy story?
Well, you know, he when I first started to get wind of Secret Empire, I was nervous and sort of fought it very briefly for a minute to go, wait a minute, I just put Deadpool with Captain America. Like, I can't – boy, he'd get burned down and all that. And then it sort of hit me like a ton of bricks that that was going to be my end. I was like, oh, that's brilliant. You know, like Wade finally is sort of like accepted, tamed for a brief moment by Cap. And that, you know, the time – the one time that somebody bets on Captain America and loses, it's Wade. And so it was really a glorious last act. I really didn't want to stay on the stage too long. I had a couple of big exits that we could have taken. And I'm really glad that, you know, I feel like we're leaving before we run out of gas. And I'm also, look, very selfishly, usually you leave a book and then you watch from afar as, you know, a new creative team comes in and does what they need to do. And it usually involves an arson fire of whatever you did.
Sure.
And that is the way of the business. Like, I don't begrudge it. You got to do what you got to do. And in this version, by having Wade take the fall, even in a way that Steve Rogers doesn't, for his actions in Secret Empire, I got to be the arsonist. And so, you know, we have had a lot of fun with the despicable Deadpool as he is on the lam for the murders that he committed at Steve Rogers' request before he even knew that he was Steve Rogers. But yeah, so there's that. I mean, like, that's been a great end for my story on Deadpool. And I'm starting to see the inks for 300, and it's our funniest and most effed up issue ever. So that feels like we were not going to be able to top it. And I'm so glad to be able to wrap out and, you know, that'll hit, I think, in May.
Okay.
And that's 20 pages from Koblish, 20 pages from Lolly, and 20 pages from Hawthorne.
Wow.
And that's our mic drop. And hopefully the mic goes through the floor like it was bathed in some alien blood. And I, you know, I'm sincerely grateful to not have to write Deadpool and can return to Deadpool as a fan.
Sure.
Boy, that feels good.
I can appreciate that. Absolutely, man. Yeah, no. And like you said, 125 issues. Holy shit.
So, yeah, it's crazy.
Absolutely, man. No, that's great. That sounds fantastic. And yeah, great, three great artists to wrap things up with as well. That's wonderful. So very cool, man. And how about Guardians beyond the Thanos event, or I should say the Infinity event here?
You know,
are
what?
You staying on Guardians, or are you leaving Guardians as well?
Yeah, Guardians is wrapped for the time being. I think I know exactly what will happen with Guardians and when, but, you know, for the moment, you know, Infinity Countdown will sort of put them through the ringer.
Okay.
And we'll see what survives of them as a unit after that.
Okay. Wow. Very cool.
I have to be coy. Sort of coy on that one. Yeah, there will be a lot of fun Guardian stories. We'll have to wait and see exactly what that means.
Okay. What have they announced what you're doing next or no?
No.
Okay.
Nope.
All right. Well, we'll wait. And I think I can't remember now if you said it off the air. You're coming to C2E2, so.
I am. I'll be at C2E2. I'll be there doing some Marvel panels. I'll be promoting Infinity Countdown. I'll also be that week Analog
right.
comes out. So I'm using C2E2 as a coming out party for this new book that David O'Sullivan and I are doing at Image.
Well, that's a good segue into speaking about Analog. You were kind enough to send me the first couple issues, and I got a preview of it back in New York. There was a little press thing going on, and a handful of us gathered to hear about various Image books that were coming in the months ahead. T. Franklin was there talking about Bingo Love, and you were there talking about Analog. Yeah. Were you at the Image Central presentation in Portland a week or so ago?
I was. I got to go up. I was in Portland most of last week, and then I stuck around and did my first Comics Pro meeting. It was a blast.
Cool.
I had a lot of fun. You know, my background, I worked for a retailer out in Los Angeles for a number of years. So I'd like to think, you know, it makes me a better comics creator. Maybe not always, but the idea that I sort of know, you know, what their ups and downs are, I think is interesting. I sort of, in both of my new Image works, I was really thinking about the retailers in naming them. You know, Analog is a very, I think, good title for the work, but it's also a title that's the first name that you're going to have to go through in the solicits.
Absolutely, man. You're talking to a person that was stupid enough to name their podcast Word Balloon. So, yeah, seriously, my dad used to tell me all the time, if you're going to name something, name it at the top of the alphabet. His restaurant was Bella's, so it was a B, yep. And then he had an auto repair shop, and it was Ace Auto Repair.
Ace, of course.
So, yeah, exactly, man. So, yeah, I know my dad was just spinning in the grave, like, what's with Word Balloon? What are you thinking, man?
Word Balloon. Yeah, but it's a great, you know, I feel like you've overcome your W.
Yeah, I hope so. I certainly hope so. But Analog, you're right, man. That's fantastic. So,
and then with Dead Rabbit, even though it's a much different story, you know, that my second Image book later this year, I'd like it to be stocked. You know, if you liked my work on Deadpool, the next thing on the shelf is going to be Dead Rabbit. And even though it'll be quite different, I'm hoping that, you know, the fans that liked my bullshit over there will enjoy it over here.
Well, let's start with the backdrop of Analog, because a near future story, some espionage in there. We really get a sense of potentially where the world might be going in our current world of social media and information and lack of privacy. And I know those are some of the things you're hitting with this series. So tell us about it.
Yeah, it's an idea. You know, I had a couple of ideas for books that I started wrenching on as creator on stuff over the years. You know, I've needed to take the slow boat because I've been so busy at Marvel. But I was grateful that this one took a long time to bring to the printer because, you know, we started, David O'Sullivan and I started wrenching on it in 2015, and obviously the world changed in 2016.
Sure.
So all of a sudden, the book felt like, you know, every day it was becoming a little less speculative, you know, for
sure.
Speculation. And look, I'm, you know, I am a citizen of the internet. I hopefully am a good citizen of the internet, but I'm raising my son to be a little more mysterious. You know, the idea that mistakes are indelibly written onto your permanent record, you know, I don't think is fair for people. But the idea here that Analog really is putting out there is just to go, look, what happens to our world when secrets are no longer shared online because the internet is so insecure. You know, there are worms out there. There's, you know, Manchurian chips. And basically after a mass doxing, you know, nobody sends anything important over the web anymore. That would be crazy. You know, you pay an armed courier named that's called a ledger man or a paper jockey some money to get your secret where it's going. So I'm just really looking to the future to turn back the clock. You know, I want to bring back Al Capone's bookkeeper and do away with mobile phones.
Sure.
And tell a story about where I worry that we're headed. And, you know, so far it's landed real well. Eric Stevenson at Image really liked the first issue that David and I showed him and greenlit it. And, you know, the good news is for us, we're just about wrapping up the first trade.
Fantastic. Yeah, you sent me three issues already, and book is debuting in April.
Yeah, it's like now it's more like five. And so we may run without an interruption between for as long as we can. We'll see. We have a lot of story to tell, and we're having a lot of fun. And, you know, all of that is done. You know, we're coming up on final order cutoff If this sounds like a book that you're interested in, let your retailer know. I think it's March 12th.
Okay, good, because I was planning, as we're recording this, we're literally recording it on February 28th, and I did plan to put this out early next week. So.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, that's great.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, so, you know, Declan Shalvey introduced me to David, and, you know, that's how we got our brilliant colorist out of it, too. David's this is his first published work. Which will seem crazy when you pick up the issue, because it just seems like a guy, that has a couple hundred issues under his belt. You know, I'm grateful for the chance to work with him, and you know, it's got some big ideas, but it's still a very character driven piece.
Sure.
You know, our hero is a guy named Jack McGinnis, and he's bit of a human punching bag. He drinks hard, he gets punched hard, but he'll get your book, your ledger, where it needs to go. He's romantically linked and is partners with a woman that we'll come to meet as the story unfolds. I think her story is really interesting. She was sort of set free by the mass doxing. She was being trafficked. And so when everyone's secrets spilled onto the web, it obviously a huge disruption really across every bit of society. And, you know, she was freed by that. And so, you know, she and Jack have that in common. And, you know, we're leaping over our current political situation, but we're sort of landing in a place where, you know, some of the darker elements of society that have been emboldened, I think, are still there even in 2024. So, it's sort of a not optimistic future, but I hope that these characters are a bit optimistic. And, you know, look, selfishly, it's just a chance to have some fun in a way that I don't see anyone else really having fun right now. And that I did away with cell phones. And anytime you can do that, you're really helping your story. It's not any secret that, like, you know, Rick's Deadly Class is set in the 80s, where you can't just FaceTime someone and get out of a jam. You're gonna have to do it the old-fashioned way.
Understood. Absolutely, man. Yeah, Rick Remender you're talking about. Well, and also God, I remember having this conversation, I think, with Matt Wagner a few years ago, and how, you know, Google Maps and some of these things would really make it hard for Batman to really exist in today's world and everything. So, yeah, no, I get it. And these are some of the classic tropes of espionage that I think make it more challenging in today's world because of the digital world. And in fact, was just watching CNN and they were talking about how President Trump doesn't email purposefully.
Yeah.
And that he relies on, you know, phone conversations and things. And so you can see the effectiveness of having these, you know, ledger couriers that are running around, and also information drops and things that were such a big part of espionage stories and everything. It's fun. And I think it is missed in, I think, today's attempts to, you know, do that cyber world kind of espionage.
Yeah. Exactly right. I mean, it's such a fun muscle to flex too that I don't ordinarily get to do sort of in my current assignments.
Sure.
And so to be able to, you know, go back, I think you and I have pretty similar taste in books and movies, and, you know, I like, you know, the older noir films, and really that's, you know, what we're sort of telling here is a crime noir.
Yes.
I'm not sure how far into analog you were able to go. I have three issues lettered. We'll meet a woman who wants to be just called Aunt Sam. She's the woman tasked with trying to be a spy in that crazy world where people are sending ideas on paper. And, you know, we'll see, like, they're trying to, like, set up, you know, copying facilities in transportation hubs in order to sort of get a sneak at what the ledger men are carting around. And, you know, it is science fiction. But at the same time, you know, after I started finally being able to talk about this idea, you know, a couple of things got back to me about our world, and you know, there's a guy at the there's a big flea market at the Rose Bowl once a month out here in Pasadena. And he refurbs typewriters.
Oh, that's
and
great.
And he's doing that sort of as a hobby. But, you know, he does it to make a couple of bucks whenever he, you know, he can. And he said that he got cleaned out by a political organization recently. Hilarious. And I find that fascinating.
Yes.
That, you know,
oh, my God.
Again, how many times do you have to get bit before you go, oh, yeah, I'm not going to go make the same mistake again? And so the things that can be committed to paper and, you know, pivoted to an analog world, that's what's happening. Like,
totally, man.
The Kremlin talked about that years ago, and whether or not it's even true, it just sort of communicates that intent, right? To go, yeah, the aggressor is going to set the tone here. And, you know, I think anything that is digital is going to one day leak. I just do. I've always thought that.
No,
I think it will also be not just your cloud data, but it'll probably be your search history and your messages. And, you know, one of the smartest guys I know in the world really came up in the tech boom and learned a lot from failing a bunch. But, you know, he has his email set to auto delete everything every 30 days because his expectation is that this is a world where eventually it will all be out there. And, you know, I had a little bit of info released in a Sony hack, and, you know, they're like, that was sort of a wake up call.
Wow,
you
actually got bit by that.
Yeah, it was like from a payment thing. You know, you do a little bit of work on for a thing that I forgot about.
Script doctoring or something.
Yeah, exactly right. And, you know, it's like stuff that I probably am not even supposed to talk about because I have an NDA, but you go to hell with it. Like, you know, the more info leaked on their end than on mine.
Interesting.
But wow. But yeah, so, you know, it is what it is.
Oh, yeah, man. You know? Don't you keep seeing those commercials for LifeLock with the Pawn Star guy,
yeah.
Rick? And it's just like, yeah, every now and then I see it. It's like, yeah, you know, that's actually not a bad idea. So,
and I can't believe we're about to let Equifax off the hook, you know. I think it's preposterous that we're going to let Equifax off the hook for that horrible data leak.
Completely,
I mean, that's
agree. And you're right. And it's nowhere security. In the news since the initial announcement of what happened and everything. And yeah, I think everybody's just kind of scared and just like, yeah, you know.
Yeah, of course. Of course.
Wow. No, you're 100% right. And again, that's why I think Analog is a book for its time. And yeah, like you said, it definitely a crime noir. And I'm as you said, a huge fan of it in books and film and comics, and always happy to talk about a new crime story that has a different spin. And it's genre bending in the sense that it's a future story, but it also has a lot of classic crime and espionage tropes in it as well at the same time. So you guys are onto something here. This is really good.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I think we'll have a lot of fun. And, you know, I just wrote something into the fifth issue that feels like, you know, it is going to happen. And, you know, it's cool to be able to take a guess about where we're going to go.
Sure.
And my only true north on my compass is whether or not it's fun. And I hope even as, you know, the story elements might be a bummer, I still hope that I understand a comic is at least $4, and, you know, we're trying to bring as much value to that as possible.
Well, and your first issue is bigger than normal too, right?
Yeah, it is. The first issue, I think, is 28 pages. So we're almost busted our self cover. But yeah, we made it in. And even the second issue, I believe, is a little bit larger too, at 24 or 26.
Okay.
And then as the story begins to unpack, it becomes a more manageable 22.
Okay, that's cool. And at 5-issue arcs, obviously, like you said, the first trade's going to be 5 issues.
Yeah, first trade's going to be 5 issues. I think if I could have done it a little differently, I might have put it to 4, because we're going to have an entry-level trade for both Analog and Dead Rabbit at $9.99.
Sure.
And so the first trade of Dead Rabbit might be 4 big-sized issues, so almost 5. But yeah, I think that makes sense for ongoings. You know,
yes.
We let people know you know, who we are and what we are for, you know, a couple of bucks off. And then if you want to stick around with the story, I feel like we earned that bump up to like, you know, $14.99
totally
for 5-6 issues. So.
No, the image model is really great. And I'm so glad that they've stuck by it and that creators get the appeal from a consumer standpoint of, okay, yeah, let me try this for $10 and see if I like this world. And it's a great value, and it's appreciated. And I'm sure you know that as well. And I'm sure you take advantage of it in the books that you like. I mean, that's the thing, man. It's so much more competitive today than it's ever been. And honestly, the big two are really taking a chance. And especially, I mean, again, I don't mean to pick on Marvel, but like, you know, these $4.99 books, man, it's like, yeah. You know, good luck. I, you know, honestly, it's like you can only do that so many times, and it better be a great story.
I'm sensitive to that too. You know, it's interesting. I'm obviously concerned the same as anyone with the industry. And I hear, you know, what's interesting is you sort of will hear the loudest voices talking about the problems, but then there are sort of the quieter voices who have sort of different problems. Like, I guess I won't sort of name names necessarily, but I talked to, you know, a shop this week, you know, who said, boy, I wish things were a little bit more higher priced because I make more money on a higher priced item. And then there are other people who are like, I can't, you know, sell $4.99 floppies.
What?
And so I get it. It's, you know, different
two different stores, retailers.
Very different clients. And so I'm sensitive to it. The good news is about the $4.99 books that I'm doing. And basically my story, I think the rest of the year, you know, I asked for and got the world from Marvel. You know, I give those editors a lot of credit, especially, you know, CB, who inherited this story from, you know, prior EIC.
Okay.
Yeah. From Axel, to just go like, yeah, I like this story. We're going to help you tell it. And, you know, I asked that because it was a cosmic book, you know, with big cosmic crazy ideas, that, you know, I have 30 pages, and they agreed. And so they are my work, you know, the Infinity Countdown issues are $4.99, but you're getting, you know, when you really boil it down, if you were willing to pay $4 for 20, but you're getting another 10 for a buck, it's added value to do those 10 pages. And you're going to see, you know, the artists, you know, it lets me open it up a little bit. And all of a sudden a half splash becomes a splash, and, you know, a splash page that is really important might get even more real estate. You know, one of the most metal things I really could have ever conjured up, Aaron Cooter's currently drawing. And if I don't see this on the side of a van before I die, I'm going to be so upset. Like, it feels that good.
Fantastic.
You know, it feels like 70s heavy metal stuff.
Sure,
and
that's awesome.
With the Guardians. And so we're just trying to have fun. And, you know, but I also know that this business is at the intersection of art and commerce, like so many, you know, artistic endeavors. And, you know, I hope, you know, obviously we have a ways to go, but the response to the Warlock issue and then the Prime issue that just dropped has been really strong.
That's awesome.
So I'm grateful for that.
Absolutely, man. No, and again, you don't set the prices, and I realize that. And also, like you said, you are getting more pages for that $4.99 price. And truly,
yeah.
I like Infinity Countdown. I thought great introduction. There's you know, again, some usual heroes and suspects as far as Marvel Cosmic goes that you would expect in this kind of story. But I think throwing in Wolverine, and I do think throwing Turk in, it, you know, kind of makes it more interesting. And yeah, I think it's a great start. And yeah,
thanks.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I really...
Oh yeah. So, and also really, I appreciate you mentioning working with CB now, because, you know, I'm a CB fan, and,
oh, me too.
And yeah. And, yeah, you know, I know from a creative standpoint where his brain and heart are. And I kind of assumed this would have been an Axel Greenlit story, that he has inherited, but I'm glad he's enthusiastic about it and that you had the chance to kind of go over story ideas with him as well.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the Axel, you know, was a guy who years ago got me, you know, gave us our start on Deadpool. Sure. And over the years, CB has been so supportive. And, you know, it actually, look, the day that CB was announced, you know, he took the time to ring me before I could even shoot him a note to congratulate
him. Oh, that's great.
And that meant the world to me, you know. So I you know, for anyone that doesn't know CB, he exudes a love of this universe as great as anyone I've ever met. And he wants the best for these stories and these characters, and the stuff that I know of behind the scenes that has been simmering for a long time, people are just now starting to see what is coming down the pipe. And, you know, I think you'll really feel CB's influence when they start talking about Deadpool soon too. And, you know, his love of it translates to the finished product. And this is going to be a real fun new era in Marvel Comics.
That's great. That's awesome, man. Well, tell me about the other Image book now.
Yeah, sure. The other thing I've been cooking up for a long time, you know, I think it was first Remender, and then I know Eric Stevenson at Image had said, hey, you know, John McCrae has been talking about wanting to do a book, and, you know, if the casting was right. And I just sort of said, look, if you're asking me if I want to work with John McCrae, that is not a question that you need to worry about.
John McCrae of Hitman fame, correct?
Yeah, yes.
Great, John McCrae. Great guy. Met him in Chicago a few years ago and have always been a longtime fan. Go on, tell people about
Wonderful him. Guy, but also just supremely, obscenely talented. Yes. And I sort of said to them, I go, look, you know, that's not the issue here. The issue is whether poor John deserves to get into the Jerry Duggan business. And you know, we chatted very briefly and saw that we both were interested in doing some something messed up in the world of crime and noir again. And I just said, I'm going to go away and figure out whatever it is that's going to make you happy. And we ended up, I think, catching lightning in a bottle with this idea about a criminal who gave up his life of crime out of love, but is now returning to a life of crime out of that same love, and what he's giving up for, you know, to do that. And, you know, what the stakes will be, because, you know, I'm writing what I know. I went to school in Boston in the early to mid 90s. And, you know, that was when he was last active, and, you know, he was a stick up artist and a hooligan, back then. And so now that, his wife is sick and they have, some desperate need for money, you know, he's going to put the mask back on and start doing some more bank jobs. But the fun thing too is just seeing what John brings to this. I always repolish my script after the art comes back. Sure. But it's such a treat to see McCrae do his thing. And this is his very best work. And I know what I'm saying there. You know, it seems like a tall tale that I'm telling, but boy, is it just bonkers. The stuff he's drawing is so fun.
Outstanding. Well, so when does that start?
He's on issue 3 and I'm writing 4 and 5, and we think that will be for August.
Okay, great.
It could be for July, but I think it's probably safer for August. I guess there's a chance it could be September, but we really want to have 3 or 4 in the can and done before we ask anyone to order it for the shop. But we got a hell of a response, you know, from the announcement, and people are really excited. And, you know, to whatever extent, you know, it helps a retailer to say, hey, it's from one of the idiots that wrote Deadpool and the co-creator of Hitman, you know, you should try this crime book. Like, great. You know, I want to make people's jobs easier. I want to make selling my comics easier. So
I understand. Yeah. Tell me about the Comics Pro retailer thing. I went to one a few years ago in Chicago, and really just wanted to be a fly on the wall. And here, publishers presenting their books and also the retailers' concerns. And, sure. and it was really fun to watch the interaction and everything. And, you know, it was some of my publisher buddies like, what are you doing here? And I'm like, I am, you know, just a fly on the wall, man. I just kind of want to see it all happen. And some retailers kind of let me in on their pass to go in and get to see it. And I think it's an interesting experience.
It's an interesting experience. You know, there's very little in terms of a unified sort of here's what works or here's what we'd like to
think
see.
Or a group philosophy. There's, sure.
And, you know, I thought that was really interesting how open they were to a lot of ideas. You know, there are a lot of retailers, and I think only sort of – it felt like, you know, the ones that I were in that room were sort of the best of the best. You know, there were a lot of folks that I knew. There were a lot of folks that I didn't know who I came to really admire. They have – you know, it's a bit of a it's really more of a working day than you might think. You know, they have meetings, mm-hmm. they have, you know, guest speakers. For my part, we were asked to participate in, it's almost like speed dating.
Yes.
We would sit down at a table for a few minutes and meet retailers yep. and ask them how we could help them better sell the product and what changes would they like to see. And a lot of the ideas were great, you know, and they then later I jumped up on almost a panel, you know, with a couple of other image creators to just talk about the new work mm-hmm. and, you know, to say where we were in the production of it. And, you know, I gave everyone my email in case people wanted to talk about signings, you know, so it, we're all in it together. You know, in the self-publishing world, it feels like, you know, we're obviously sharing a bit of the risk. You know, if we don't sell to the retailers, we can't sell to the fans. Sure. So I'm trying as best I can to sort of, you know, stay on top of my Marvel deadlines, stay on top of my self-publishing deadlines, and then also sort of get out there and be my own P.T. Barnum of all of the work, you know, is it feels like I'm picking up a side job, but I don't mind because it seriously is, you know, my pleasure to be able to make my living doing what I love so much. And by the way, that was really the takeaway from the retailer meeting is these are people who aren't just in it to make a buck. Obviously, they're there to make a living, but they are doing it. You know, there are probably more, you know, there are easier ways to get rich, and they're doing it out of love too.
Sure, absolutely. No, and I was at those, as you call them, speed dating kind of sessions, roundtables and stuff, and yeah, that was fascinating watching. And truly, I mean, retailers don't pull back punches; they tell you because they, you know, as it's been laid out many times. The profit margin and the line between success and failure for these stores, it's razor thin. And they really yeah. have to be able to believe not only in the comics, but even some of the publisher practices in terms of communication or ordering books. And I can't even remember the specifics of a Marvel thing that they were offering. And the stores are like, yeah, this isn't helping us. This is nothing. And it really was that attitude of like, sorry, no, this isn't going to work. And Marvel ended up ditching it. But it was really like there was no, well, we'll see or whatever. It's like, no, we don't have time to see. We'll tell you right now. And it wasn't out of like any stonewalling or anything like that. It was kind of this kind of puffery thing. You know. And it's funny, I'm saying this while DC is leaving the Diamond, you know, previews catalog itself and creating its own catalog in the way that Marvel has as well. This was more of a digital thing. And yeah, they're like, you're just creating more busy work for us. You're really not helping us with this thing.
I'm not, you know, look, there's a big part of, you know, the internet sort of makes everyone an expert.
Sure.
And I see a lot of chatter online from probably some very well-intentioned people and some people that are not well-intentioned talking about what the problems of the comic book industry are.
Absolutely.
And the truth of the matter is, that unless you have been on both sides of like the retailer and the creating, the publisher business, you probably don't have the right like altitude to even look down at the problems. You know, we're it's a very 20th century business model. And, you know, it has a lot of growing pains in the 21st century. You know, sure. I worry about Diamond a lot, you know, for I feel like if anyone sort of knows about Diamond, it would be your audience from the folks that have come in. It's a company that sort of has the monopoly on being able to move and ship comics from the printer to, you know, from the publisher to the fan,
right.
to the stores, comic shops, yeah. And to the stores. And so, you know, it feels like we're, you know, the times are tough now, but at the same time, you know, I still think there's a lot of money out there, you know, to be made.
Agreed.
I think that there's a lot of really exciting. Look, you know, Bendis is going to be writing Superman. Are you kidding me? Like, of course I'm going to be there. You know, I know about, you know, I've heard now several times Jason's Avengers stories, and, you know, he's going to kill that book. Sure. It's going to be amazing. Sure. Al Ewing is going to write a horror themed Hulk book. Like, I'm jealous to the point of wanting to fly over there and murder him and wear his skin and turn in scripts in my Al Ewing suit. And you know, there's a lot of really fun stuff coming from not just the big two publishers, but, you know, the Image stuff that they announced at the expo this week. There was not a book that they trotted across that stage that I wouldn't buy. So I know I'm sort of a super fan. You know, I get to write off my comics purchases.
I hear you,
but I'm there's so much good comic books out there right now. Totally. That there's a lot of reasons to be optimistic about our industry, even though I think 2017 was a hard year by most accounts.
I hear you, man. And no, and I agree with you as well. And yeah, and I think because it was such a hard year, some of the shakeups, and that's something that Brian and I talked about on our last podcast chat, you know, almost needed to happen, you know, at the top. And, you know, even no offense to Axel. I like Axel a lot. But yeah, maybe it was time for a different direction as well. And that's why I think CB as an editor in chief is a positive step. And yeah, and I think DC, Rucky years ago said that DC and Marvel are like the tortoise and the hare. And yeah, and Marvel's the hare. And Marvel is able to be a little more nimble, a little quicker and stuff. And when you think they got a couple laps ahead, and all of a sudden you look and there's the tortoise right next to Marvel. And that's DC.
Right.
And I think DC is doing that. And some of the areas that I think DC is expanding in with my buddies Art and Franco and some of the young adult product that they're talking about DC Zoom.
Sure.
And all these other things. I think these are really interesting, innovative ideas. And I think some real interesting shakeups are happening in comics, and it will only mean better products and great opportunities for both readers and creators. So,
yeah, I hope so. I think so. I think regardless of, you know, whatever your poison, it sounds like you're going to get some really wonderful poison this year.
Oh, no, absolutely. Exactly. Every genre is being addressed. And I think with really quality creators behind it and great ideas. So, no, I think it is an interesting time. Well, let me ask you, if we've got a couple more minutes, do you have a couple?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, cool. Well, because I want to ask, yeah, you know, I mean, both what's going on with you in the scripted world, if anything, and also, as always, I'm always fascinated with where comedy is, because I think comedy's the ability to make an impact in comedy, it looks like it keeps changing. And there are weird, you know, ways of breaking through, whether it's, you know, through a viral video or the traditional stand-up way. But well, first of all, in the scripted world, what's happening with you, if you can talk about it?
Sure, a little bit. I was paid last year to wrench on an adaptation of one of my comic books. You know, there's not an announcement there yet, but that was fun to be able to do.
Cool.
You know, it felt like that was a very early goal of mine that I sort of, as the movie business really began to change and Hollywood looked towards comic books for really all of its source material, I sort of set aside that dream of writing a feature in order to sort of, you know, get into the IP business, you know, sure. in one way or the other. You know, I've been thrilled to be able to do it for Marvel and equally thrilled to be able to do it for myself at Image. But that was neat to be able to do. And I took that check and I bought a nice camera for myself. I like to take pictures. And so, you know, that's sort of the only thing that I have as an outlet that doesn't feel like I'm trying to monetize.
Oh, so still, you know, photography is like kind of an outlet.
Yeah, still photography. Cool. I'm not a great photographer, but if I shoot enough, I'll eventually, you know, just by law of averages, end up with a couple of pictures from each night out that I don't hate.
I hear you.
so I do that. And that's the Hollywood thing in a nutshell. There might be some more news down the line, but there's nothing that I personally can talk about now.
Okay.
The interesting thing about, you know, comedy is, you know, I wrote for Attack of the Show for 5 years.
Yeah, live day. Absolutely, the old G4 show, if people remember, and old I'm sure G4, they do.
Yep, we're live every day at 4 with Kevin Pereira and Olivia Munn, and then later with Chris Hardwick and Allison Hayslip, and a lot of fun, an amazing experience to be able to really sharpen your wits on a live show that, you know, if the show was great, you couldn't take a victory lap, and if the show was just a pile of shit, you couldn't really dwell on it because the next day there's another hour to fill.
Absolutely,
anyway.
Man. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, you know, for sports radio, I understand that kind of thing. Yeah, man, you're only as good as your last show, and you got to do it again tomorrow.
It's live. It's, you know, you have to. It's an unforgiving mistress. But that was a wonderful way for me to really get my chops up. You know, I then used Twitter. You know, I thought for a while maybe I was going to end up on a late night show before the comics stuff really took off. And so, you know, anymore, I love working with comedy writers and I love working with comedians. Every February, I'm so grateful that Patton Oswalt asks me to contribute materials to the award shows that he hosts. So he's been doing the WGA awards for the last couple of years on the West
Coast.
Oh, it's so much fun to work with your friends, and Patton's been such a good friend to me. And then to come out of it, and it's the easiest job in the world to pitch jokes to Patton. I've never pitched him a joke that he didn't walk out on stage and make 10 times better as it left his lips, and somehow I get the credit for it. So it's you know, it's great work if you can get it, but please don't get it. It's my favorite work.
That's
but I work. So I work with Matt Oswalt. His brother is very funny. And Mike Drucker and Paul Appel, who's a SNL alum and, pardon me. We also do the Visual Effects Society Awards every year.
Oh, fun.
And that's just really, you know, on top of having fun with your buddies, you're also meeting people that you admire in almost every discipline of filmmaking. So there was one year we were hanging out backstage. I think this was the year that Hugo was the big awards winner. And so Martin Scorsese was being presented with the big award that year. Okay. And so, you know, the green room at the Beverly Hilton is only so big. And, you know, you get to hang out with him for a little while before he goes out on stage and speaks. Yeah, I mean, it's I ended up sharing a couple of pictures on my Instagram this year. We met Mark Hamill and Kevin Feige. And, you know, there's a really interesting camaraderie back there. You know, they're meeting people that they admire too, and it's fun to be in that situation. The WGA Awards the last couple of years have been a blast to write comedy for because, boy, that's sort of a smart, funny audience.
Sure.
And
absolutely,
you know, we feel you know, it makes us feel good to be able to comment on our political situation in a room where no one's going to block you on Twitter. Hey, Adam Schiff was there this year.
Wow. the congressman that's in the the minority guy on the Intelligence Committee that is more, it seems more frustrated by the lack of cooperation from the Trump people than the Republican leader.
At that moment, he had not had his memo released, and Patton got to introduce him as the congressman who's written the hottest spec in town that no one's allowed to read. And then really a giant, huge standing ovation, like a roar. I had not heard this many writers ever roar this loud ever.
That's awesome. So that's fantastic.
It's neat. It's a fun way to spend award season.
Hilarious. That's fantastic, man. Jesus. What was the, and I know we've talked about it before, but what was that pilot you guys did for Comedy Central? You, Posehn, and Patton, and Sarah Silverman that did, wasn't it?
It was a Comedy Central pilot called Super Nerds.
Super Nerds, that's right. And it's on YouTube still, right?
I don't know. I think that it got taken down. It was there for a while. Look, very, very like decent pilot. I think Brian and Patton were, as the two guys who wrote the pilot, you know, were a little, they looked back on it and wished that it would have been different for, various reasons. But I think it was so ahead of its time that it didn't have a chance. And what we didn't know at the time, that was my secret origin, by the way. I was working at Golden Apple Comics in Hollywood. These guys were just coming in. I obviously knew who they were. They made me laugh. And I was thrilled when they said, hey, could you come into Dakota Pictures, the production company that was making it, and help them make the set look like a real comic book set? There's no budget for it. And the guy that, was doing it hadn't really ever stepped foot in a comic shop. And I said, absolutely. And Bill Leibowitz, the owner of Golden Apple at the time, let me grab his Rolodex and ring up creators that owned their own IP. So, for instance, I rang Mike Mignola and said, hey, could we use Hellboy on the set? David Mazzucchelli gave us rubber blankets.
Oh, wow.
I mean, like, it really looked like a comic shop. And that was actually where I first interacted with Joe too. And Joe signed off on the Marvel stuff being able to be used. And it just looked like a real world.
Totally.
And, we didn't know it at the time, but Comedy Central did two pilots. One was Super Nerds, and Odenkirk was directing that. Wow. For Brian and Patton. And that's actually how I met my wife. My wife was working for Bob at the time.
Crazy.
So everything in the world that ever happened that was good to me came out of that comic shop job. But we didn't know it, but the other pilot was a show called Strip Mall that I think ran for many years. But like the Comedy Central executive was married to the creator of Strip Mall.
Oh, Jesus.
if we had known, I feel like we would have maybe not worked as hard on it.
Well, I got to see it, and it was great. And you've got a great Hitchcockian sort of quick walk on.
I do. I'm like a nerd in the shop. Exactly. They were all very good to me. The first time I made any of them laugh on set, I remember was on that stage when we were stopped down at a lunch, and being able to like make your heroes all laugh feels so good. And then Posehn looked over at me, and I'll never forget this. He just said, yeah, great. Now write 10 more of those.
Wow. Jesus.
I was like, okay.
Did you,
right out of it.
Did you have, and no, forgive me, continue if you got more on that.
No. I mean, that was it. That was the,
well, I'm glad you're doing the award stuff and everything. Did you, on Netflix, did you see the, Doug Kenny, biopic that, oh God, no! I'm blanking. SNL guy. Will.
Yeah, is it Will Sasso? Right.
It was Forte. I want to say.
Oh, Will Forte. Yeah. Excuse me. Yeah, I haven't had a chance yet. I'm so far behind on stuff, but I'll add that to my queue if it's not in there now. I can't listen to voices when I write.
Of course, absolutely.
Interferes. So and I've been writing so much that the stuff is piled up on Netflix.
Sure.
Stuff is piled up on my DVR. I'm behind on everything.
What do you listen to? Do you listen, obviously, music or something? But yeah, what do you hear?
Yeah, I listen to soundtracks.
And
the soundtracks, you know, it's funny. iTunes used to clearly display how many times you'd listen to certain tracks. And I do listen to certain tracks on repeat while I finish a script or a scene in a script anyway. And so I listen to a lot of over the last couple of years, a lot of Hans Zimmer.
Okay.
The Junkie XL stuff is great. That Fury Road soundtrack, you know, I've probably written, you know, more cosmic Marvel stuff to that. Actually, Pepe Larraz and I have an ongoing thread back and forth where we recommend soundtracks to each other. And I'm really excited for the new Johnny Greenwood soundtrack from the movie that made a lot of headlines at Sundance. It was called You Were Never Really Here, I think.
Oh, I don't know about that. Okay.
Yeah, it looked like Joaquin Phoenix as sort of a cleaner. So it seemed pretty pretty interesting. But I'm a Radiohead and Johnny Greenwood fan, and so I listen to There Will Be Blood. Sure. And, you know, I have them organized in my iTunes sometimes by genre. Like, I have a whole folder of Jason Bourne soundtracks and, you know, John Powell stuff. And then a lot of old stuff, too, like Lalo Schifrin.
You know, I was going to ask if you listen to Lalo Bullet. Schifrin at all. Yeah, man.
I do. Yeah, I mean, like, I have Magnum Force and Bullet, and he has a crazy album that was sort of a best of, Most Wanted, 1968 to 79. So there's like a greatest hits of him there. Fantastic. And then, you know, the David Shire, the old 70s stuff. Like, I listen a lot to the Taking of Pelham 1, 2, 3. Yes. And yeah, a lot of stuff that a lot of classic old cinema. I'll re-listen to those soundtracks. Even if I wanted to, I couldn't really throw on Led Zeppelin. I just can't hear the voice. Sure. It feels like it short circuits the parade of voices in the head that I'm trying to listen to.
No, that makes total sense. And I, you know, I mean, I know people that listen to classical music while they write, and I think Warren Ellis always puts out playlists of ambient music he plays when he's writing and stuff. So
yeah. Oh, speaking of playlist, I don't know where it is anymore. I had Spotify, but when all of my Guardians scripts took a title from an actual, yes, like, song, and then that song became a playlist. So that's out there somewhere for anyone.
Oh, that's great.
To,
on Spotify?
Yeah. I think it is on Spotify. Not everything was necessarily – I don't think I could do quite everything because not everything was available on Spotify, but almost everything ended up on Spotify. So I Google Guardians and playlist and see what comes up, or Spotify, or I'll try to link it to you if I can dig it out. But that was sort of,
yeah, absolutely, man.
When people realized that was happening.
Hilarious.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. And you gotta, you know, for analog and again, I forgive me. What's the McRae book called again?
That's called Dead Rabbit.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, I expect a Lalo Schifrin heavy, playlist for Dead Rabbit, obviously.
For sure. Martin Dobbs is that stick-up man who managed to get clean away and is sort of playing with fire again. But he, you know, he used to tell the story that he'd put on the mask and tell people he was descended from one of the original Dead Rabbits. It's all a lie, but that was a badass thing that he sort of threatened people with, made people think twice before they crossed
him. Hilarious! That's fantastic, man. Jesus. Well, as always, man, you got a lot of good ideas percolating, and I'm glad we get the chance to read them.
It's always a pleasure to talk to you. I appreciate it. Sorry it's been so long.
No, Jared's 50-50. I take half the blame as well. You know, that's the thing. I'll see someone at a con and be like, hey, let's talk. And then I realize, okay, yeah, that was 15 months ago. Not just a year ago, even more. And yeah, I mean, God, I was embarrassed. You know, Ruck is one of my best friends in comics. And I'm like, yeah, he's like, yeah, we haven't talked in over a year. And I'm like, oh, Jesus. But again, you know, I see you guys at cons And in my mind, it's like, all right, well, we just had a conversation. I think subconsciously, like, all right, that counts. And I don't realize, no, that isn't a podcast. That's just a conversation, dumbass.
Yeah, nothing happened. Exactly.
So, no, I'm glad to help you promote the new books and the Marvel stuff and everything, man. No, and truly, yeah, it's always great to get your point of view, Jer. So thanks for coming on. And when Dead Rabbit gets going and everything, yeah, I either should have you back or get John on. And
That would be amazing.
Yeah, so
love
you're gonna have to help me get him. So
John's got that charming accent. You don't want to listen to my voice anymore.
That's true. I understand. Sal Abinanti, one of my favorite Chicago Italians, introduced me. Jan, you gotta meet Jan McCrae. He's fantastic.
Yeah.
And he is fantastic. And it was
that's a very good, you really do a good job of scrubbing your Chicago out, but it comes through there. It's amazing.
I can't help it, man. It's in the back there. My dad had like a nice heavy Chicago accent. Does your wife from the Chicago area? Does she have a Chicago accent?
No, she's sort of spent, la-di-da. she doesn't have much of a hint of it anymore. But you really sounded like I was talking to someone from like Midnight Run just now.
That's awesome.
I've got the discs.
I'm going to stab you in the heart with this pencil. I swear to God. Exactly. Oh, no, those are the best, man. Jesus. Well, all right. I'm looking forward to seeing you at C2E2 in a couple weeks, and people should come by and see you there. Are you going to? At this point, it'll already been past Emerald City.
I'm missing Emerald City, so it turns out you didn't miss anything. It's one of my favorite shows, but I'm not going to be able to go this year.
I understand that.
Just too much work.
Sure. Well, we would rather have the donuts than you shaking hands and signing comics, so that's good. But yeah, man. All right, I'll see you in about a month, and. Good luck with the new books, and keep up the great work, man.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. I'll talk to you soon.
All right, there you go. Jerry Duggan, wonderful conversation. Glad to share it with you on today's Word Balloon, brought to you again by the League of Word Balloon listeners. Thank you very much, League, for your support. Greatly appreciated, especially during convention season. So thank you for helping the cause out. If you'd like to help out as well, you can go to wordballoon.com, click on the Patreon ad. That will take you to my Patreon page. Or you can go directly to patreon.com/wordballoon. Subscribe to Word Balloon if you think Word Balloon and the content that I provide every month is, you know, it's kind of an audio magazine when you think about it. Each episode is its own little feature. And one of the reasons why I try to go more than an hour with these guys is, you know, a convention panel is usually 45, 50 minutes if you're lucky. And Word Balloon, I give you, you know, at least an hour, if not more. Example, today, going as long as I did with Jerry. It's a pleasure. And I think you learn more about the writers, and I think in some ways, it can inspire writers and artists that want to get into the comic book field. And any creative people, I think, find inspiration in hearing how other creative people think. I know I do. I get a lot out of these conversations, and I hope you do too. If you think it's worth your while and want to subscribe to Word Balloon, again, go to patreon.com/wordballoon or click on the ad on the front page of wordballoon.com. But thank you, League of Word Balloon listeners. Word Balloon is also brought to you by InStock Trades. At InStockTrades.com, there's a lot of interesting Jerry Duggan product waiting for you at InStock Trades. You can get Hulk Trade Paperback Volume 2, Omega Hulk. Mark Bagley doing the art. This was Jerry's run on the Hulk. Pretty neat stuff. And Doc Green, it begins the Omega Hulk run, and pretty interesting story. It's 42% off, $11.59. You can get Hawkeye versus Deadpool. Man, those are two guys just waiting to go up against each other. Pretty funny stuff, as always. But this is 42% off, $9.85. There's lots of Deadpool trades waiting for you at InStockTrades.com. There's also things like, let's see, Deadpool, World's Greatest, Volume 6, Patient Zero, that is 42% off, $10.43. Volume 7, Deadpool Does Shakespeare, $9.27. There is, like I said, just I'm scrolling here, Deadpool. How about Arkham Manor? Man, I forgot about this one with our buddy Sean Crystal, too, doing the art. Pretty neat stuff, an Arkham Asylum Gotham City story. It's a six-issue Batman story here, 42% off, just $8.69. Lots of Guardian of the Galaxy stuff, too. You can get Volume 1, 2, or 3. Volume 1, Communication Breakdown, $10.43. Volume 2, Riders in the Sky, $10.43, and Volume 3, Infinity One, $9.27. All waiting for you at InStockTrades.com. Great books, great prices. Do it now, InStockTrades.com. Thanks for listening to Word Balloon. Thanks again for helping me out this March. It's been a great month, but we're not done. Lots to come, and lots on the march to C2E2. I'm going to be talking to a few creative people that will be at the convention along with me. In some cases, we're doing panels. In other cases, they're just my buddies that I want to help promote, as they'll be at the con as well. So be listening in the days ahead of Word Balloon. You're going to hear a lot of C2E2 programming on the way. And I hope to see you there at the convention. In the next couple episodes, I'll let you know my schedule as far as my panels. I got a couple panels that I'll be at this convention in Chicago. And really looking forward to seeing everybody and shaking listeners' hands and thanking them directly for listening to Word Balloon. Until next time, Word Balloon is a copyright feature of Shaky Productions, copyright 2018.